We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
Madam President, you represent Newport, one of the state's leading tourist attractions, so I'm sure you were watching with fascination as the cooler and warmer fiasco recently unspooled in Rhode Island. After this big mess, do you think state officials can really be trusted to get right the matter of promoting tourism in Rhode Island?
I do. We knew from the beginning that the creation of a state marketing plan would rise all ships and be very controversial. That piece of it, I believe, is a good investment for all of Rhode Island, particularly Newport, Providence, and Warwick, who benefit so greatly from tourism. As far as the cooler and warmer, I have to credit the governor for standing up and saying, bad idea, because of lack of involvement, I think, of Rhode Islanders. And I do believe that we move forward from here and address the bigger issue, which quite honestly is getting us into airports, getting us into train stations all around the country, getting us in on CNN Business News. I want to be sitting on an airplane and see a video of Rhode Island, not Iceland, and be proud to know that we're marketing our state nationally. And that's the piece that's been missing.
Let's go to Scott.
Newport did a pretty good job, always has in the last 20 or 30 years, on getting tourists to Newport. Don't you want to keep that presence in Newport? I mean, even without this slogan and this statewide branding thing, my understanding in South County in Newport is that tourism was way up last summer, a very successful season.
Tourism is up, but we can do better. We definitely can do better. And how do we do better? We do better by working together as a state, getting people to stay here longer. This state, from shore to shore, is beautiful.
There's a hot debate playing out right now on the future of the 610 connector in Providence. I wonder if you agree with State DOT Director Peter Alviti that it makes most sense to have some kind of hybrid concept with a tunnel, or are the transportation advocates who prefer a boulevard, do they have the right approach?
The hybrid approach to me seems like the better approach after talking to my colleagues from Providence.
How come?
One of the critical issues is because 75% of the folks, around 75%, my understanding is, actually going to Cranston and Johnston and other areas. So I like the idea of it being green. I certainly wouldn't want to see what's there simply be rebuilt. I think it's important that DOT be out in the community, and it should be as green as it can possibly be. I think it's really important that this federal money come to our state and that the communities be connected on both sides of that throughway as much as possible. My understanding is the current proposals in some areas, they're very well connected, and it might need to be strengthened in other areas. So I'm hoping that working together, compromise is always the best solution, and that they're able to address some of the concerns that the citizens have raised in the city of Providence.
Health director in Rhode Island just approved two freestanding urgent care clinics. Was this a mistake? They're for profit. They're not going to take Medicaid patients.
Legally, it's my understanding, because it was a license, she had no choice. But I have grave concerns over medical tourism and freestanding emergency rooms, given the concerns given the issues we're seeing right now around Memorial Hospital. That speaks for itself. Yes, I am concerned that the health director may not have had any choice because it was a license rather than a certificate of need. And I am supporting, and the Senate is going to pass legislation which will require any future developments of this type to fulfill a certificate of need rather than merely be a license issued by the director of health.
The Hospital Conversion Act sets a pretty high bar when you're switching from a nonprofit to for-profit. Is that what you're going to do with these freestanding ones?
We're going to require future, you can't do it retroactively, to go through the certificate of need process. Mm-hmm. The Healthcare Council was merely advisory in this instance. They couldn't make a final decision.
We're talking here with State Senate President Teresa Pivoweed. We've seen how, since the state Supreme Court in 2009 stripped the power of the State Ethics Commission to police core legislative functions, there hasn't been exactly a groundswell of support in the legislature to restore that oversight. I'd like to go back to the legal case that brought this all about. One of your predecessors, former Senate President William Irons, voted against a pharmacy bill opposed by CVS while pocketing hundreds of thousands of dollars in commissions on policies covering CVS workers. Do you think it was acceptable for him to make that vote?
Once again, I don't know the things you just stated to be facts, and I'm not going to pass judgment.
It was extensively reported in the Providence Journal.
I'm not going to pass judgment on a former legislator, but what I do believe is that the legislature should be governed by the Ethics Commission. And 2 years ago, the Senate passed a bill that would have sent to the voters and restored the power of the Ethics Commission to have jurisdiction over speech and debate. Acts that are criminal in nature continue to be prosecuted and need to be prosecuted.
Your counterpart in the House, Speaker Mattiello, is working on drafting his own ethics bill. Do you think we will see any compromise between the House and Senate this year that will result in voters getting a chance to vote this November on restoring ethics oversight?
I'm very confident that we're going to be able to find the balance between the speech and debate clause and common constitutional protections that are afforded to general assemblies, even at the national level of speech and debate. So I think that the balance can be found.
Should we be capping the number of charter schools that are out there? What do you say?
The issue isn't just capping the number. The issue is capping the growth, because you have some charter schools that may have three classes and you may have children that are in the second and third grade. And the question becomes, should they be allowed to come back to the Board of Education to complete those? Generally speaking, I support those charters which have found niches, such as the International Institute, the Nurses Academy. I think that they serve an important population, important cause. I have significant concerns about the continued growth of the mayoral academies because they do not fill that unique niche. They are simply draining the resources of the traditional public schools.
The state Senate has supported this session an effort to boost green jobs in Rhode Island. What do you see as being the key to catalyzing that to a higher level?
Two things in particular, working with DLT and
the Department of Labor and
Department
Training.
Department of Labor and Training, and provide course and job training for green jobs here in Rhode Island. We are going to have the first offshore wind farm, and none of our institutions, such as CCRI, are offering the training that's necessary to maintain those wind turbines. That's just one example. We will encourage investment by green energy companies here in our state.
That's great, but how about the Boroughville Power Plant? Yes or no?
Thankfully, I don't have to vote on that, so I'm not hearing the arguments on both sides. What I can say is I support natural gas. This plant proposal seems to me to be very large. The residents have come out very, very concerned, and I'm hoping that the people that are building that plant are hearing the residents and listening to those concerns.
The director of the State Board of Elections, Robert Kando, has been under fire for his management there. Should he be fired?
Once again, that's up to the board, but
what do you think?
I haven't had the chance to evaluate his performance, but at this point, it does appear that what we need is a functioning Board of Elections prior to the next election, which is going to be very significant. Whatever that takes, it takes. I am not going to say he should stay or go because I'm not directly his supervisor. And I don't know. It appears that a lot of the votes have been divided there. Whatever the cause, though, they need to straighten it out and get their act together over there. We have a presidential election coming up, and it's not functioning.
Before we let you go, I'd like to ask, if you win re-election this November and win another term as Senate president, is there any chance that we might see you vacate the Senate presidency during the course of that next term?
Oh, geez. That's a lot of ifs. But at this point, my plan is to get through today and run for re-election for my Senate seat in the end of June, which is still 3 months away.
What's your thinking on how long you would like to remain as Senate president?
At least until the end of today.
We're out of time, so thank you for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And Senate President Teresa Pivoweed.
Thanks.